Set your course for the Hoth system. General Veers, prepare your men.
All troops will debark for ground assault. Prepare to target the main generator.
Echo Station 3TA.
Spotted Imperial Walker.
Attack pattern Delta. Go now. Watch that clock fire, boys. Right now, I feel like I can take on the whole Empire myself.
Target, maximum firepower.
Imperial troops have entered the bay. Imperial troops have entered.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Echo Base. This is episode number 115. We're recording this on, what's today? Today is Tuesday, the 26th of September. I am joined by only one co-host tonight. Only one of us who cared enough to be here, I guess, with me. So, Tim, that is you this evening.
That's me.
How are you tonight?
Not too bad, Lou. Yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. We are, about a week and a half away from New York Comic Con?
Yeah, very excited.
So I'm excited about that. We're going to be face-to-face. The two twins will be, me and my stunt double will be in the same room together again.
That's right. I do have to put out there that one of the things I'm really excited about, and I've kind of been thinking, pondering, almost to the verge of agonizing, especially after Celebration, wanting to do a cosplay.
Oh, okay, cool. And you have one ready for New York?
I do. From Celebration, I was really, obviously, since Celebration is Star Wars focused, I was very focused on trying to figure out some type of Star Wars cosplay. And, you know, there's some challenges for me. I do wear glasses. I don't tolerate contacts at all. So,
okay. That's tough.
I guess, you know, to be indoors for the most part would be fun without my glasses, but I want to have them on to see things at a distance. I, as you mentioned, you know, we are stunt doubles, so I am bald. So, you know, if I wanted something that was kind of really, you know, character realistic and they had hair, well, that's not me. I mean, I guess I could always put a wig on, but that would be really uncomfortable, I would think.
Yep, they'll be very itchy for the day, yep.
And for as much as I truly admire and love, and they're just so iconic, things like stormtroopers, it's also, you're one of a gazillion of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I would kind of want something that stood out. And I also know that the stormtrooper ones, like, they're very difficult to sit in and some other stuff. So
you need a Sherpa for the day if you're going to be a guy in armor. Yeah. You need someone to, you need a handler for the day is what you need.
Exactly. Exactly. And I know, you know, obviously there are some benefits to, like, some of the costuming groups, like the 501st or the Rebel Legion or the Mando Mercs, is that kind of one of the perks that they have for their members is that at these cons, they get enough space where you have changing areas and you can store your stuff and they help you with your armor and that kind of stuff, which kind of is kind of a nice community thing that they do for their folks. But I'm not there yet. And it's something that I really still want to explore. A few weeks ago, hanging out with a buddy of mine, John, who mentioned some other possibilities for cosplay. And since it's a Comic-Con, it's kind of an anything goes type of thing. So I'm going to leave it as a surprise. I'm not going to say what it is that I'm doing.
Cool.
There is one person on the network who knows what it is. And that is Liz, and she's not talking. And I told her because she's not going to Comic-Con. So I want to be able to surprise you and Chris.
No, Joel, I'm looking forward to it. That's awesome.
And other folks. So
it's kind of like, you know, not that you know, what I did at Celebration was very minuscule compared to anybody who, I mean, I almost hate calling it cosplay because I'm like, people put so much time and effort into their costumes, and mine was just, you know, literally an afternoon worth of work of the, you know, K2SO head above my head. It was fun, but it was fun to not tell you guys and show up with it and have, you know, have you guys react to that. It was fun. So I'm looking forward to seeing what you do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It'll be good. And as it turns out, I actually had a lot of the stuff for this. There were only a couple of things that I had to get. Okay. So it was very cost effective. I think it's gonna be very comfortable to wear. It's gonna be very easy to wear.
Nice.
And it'll be fun. So I'm very much looking forward to it. And it's my first adventure in cosplay. So even though we kind of digressed here, but Comic-Con. Very excited about it.
It's fun because it's something we got to talk about. I think we're going to talk about it afterward as well too. And
Fun.
Now I will not be doing cosplay, but I will be bringing my lightsaber. This will be my first outing with my lightsaber.
Oh, cool!
At an event, so yeah, I'll get that charged up and put together and hanging from my belt, and we'll call that a day. So it'll be fun.
Nice, very nice. So you'll have your lightsaber and your matching tattoo.
That's right. My matching tattoo. Yes.
Yeah. Awesome.
Okay, so I guess we should jump right into the news. We don't have a lot of stuff coming up here, but speaking of New York Comic Con, there is an event that you are going to get to go to that I am not, unfortunately. I didn't react fast enough to buying tickets. We talked in the last episode, right, about the book, the Certain Point of View book, and all the different authors that are lending their pens to this effort. Well, there's going to be a panel off-site at New York Comic Con, mm-hmm. I think just around the block from where the Comic Con is, who's going to be at the event, actually? Because I know they're doing copies of the book that are signed by like 15 or 20 authors. I don't think they're all going to be at the event.
They're going to have a lot of them there. There's a list maybe 8 or 10 of the authors that are going to be there.
And I think Pablo is running the show.
Yep. I think Delilah Dawson's going to be there, who did Phasma. We're going to talk some about Phasma a little bit later tonight. Mm-hmm. A good handful of other authors. So they're going to have copies, basically the price of admission to this event, which I think was 40 or 45.
It was 45.
Yeah. So I initially, when I read this, and you know, if you're going to Comic-Con, you end up on ReadPop's email distribution for this. And so then you get the email saying, hey, we have this event. They've been pretty good. They send, 2 or 3 emails a week.
Yep.
Talking about stuff that's going on site and some stuff that's going on off site. And for this initially, I was a little put off because it's like, oh, great. So I paid for my tickets and now I have to pay more to go do this. But then I thought about it and I realized, well, I'm getting a book, which is probably, $25 or $30 hardcover book retail.
Yep.
And all right. So big deal. It's another 10 or 15 bucks to go to this event. And the book is signed. And I get to, you know, listen to a lot of these authors and hopefully meet them and shake a few hands and that kind of stuff. So then I wasn't so upset over it. And I actually got really excited about it then. So very shortly after I got the email, I signed up for this. And I'm really excited to do it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's Saturday morning, I think, at 11.
And, yeah, 11 to 12:30. And yeah. Unfortunately, I clicked on the link too late. It says the tickets are no longer available for sale. But the book they're giving away is a limited edition book, limited edition cover of this book.
Yeah,
so it's not the same one you're going to buy at a store or anything. And yep. It's pre-signed, so everybody that signed the book is not going to be there at this panel. But right. it should be a lot of fun. I'm hoping that since the thing says tickets no longer available online, I'm hoping that there's some available there the day of the show. So I may try to get a ticket earlier to that. So because I would like to see this, and I would like to get a copy of the book. Even though I'm going to do it as an audiobook, I definitely want the copy of this too with a limited edition cover. Sounds really awesome. So.
Yeah, and I think Joel got a ticket.
Yes, I think he did. Yep.
So I know I'll see him there. And 11 o'clock is a good time. 11 o'clock Saturday morning. That should give us enough time to recover from whatever transpires Friday night.
Yeah, and, I mean, that's about the same time the show floor opens for stuff to do on the floor, so anything big that day, you'll be missing that, but this is a pretty big event in itself.
They sold them, or they said they were selling 600 tickets.
Yeah, no, it's just, I remember reading that 600 ticket thing, and on the New York Comic Con website where they talk about the event, by the way, you don't need a New York Comic Con pass to get into this event, because it's not on-site at New York Comic Con, it's off-site. It does say
Hudson Mercantile.
Yep, 500 West 36th Street.
Yep.
And it does say here, though, that they're limiting this. The copy of this book is limited to 1,000 copies in print. So
interesting.
Maybe there's more copies available for sale that aren't pre-signed. I don't know, but
maybe
we shall see. We shall see. So that is pretty cool. Let's see here. Oh, we did. We talked about this on our recent episode of Random Chatter, but it's definitely more Echo Base ish. Ryan Johnson has announced on his Instagram page that they have wrapped up post production for The Last Jedi.
Folks, I tried to stop Lou from including this in Random Chatter,
but what?
And he just wasn't hearing it. It's he was movie. So excited about it.
It's movie news.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. It is movie news.
So here we are 3 months away from the movie, and we're getting the note that they have wrapped up post-production. So now, somewhere, there is a finished print of this movie just waiting to be seen.
I have a copy of it.
Do you?
No. I don't.
Yeah, we're gonna put it online later tonight, and but you can see it.
Yeah, sadly, no. But so I kind of corresponding with that a few days ago, Mark Hamill, who, by the way, yesterday was Mark's birthday.
Oh,
happy birthday, Mark. We know that Mark is an avid listener of the Echo Base podcast. I don't know that either. It's tonight's an endless string of lies for me. He put out a tweet that suggested that if folks are interested in seeing a trailer for The Last Jedi, that they might want to tune in to Monday Night Football on October 9th.
Hmm.
I believe since then, I don't know if there was some kind of a retraction that came from him or from some other source or something. I don't remember exactly what it was. Like, I kind of think that like later on he said, hey, just kidding.
Oh, come on.
But it is what they did for The Force Awakens.
Yep.
The trailer aired on Monday Night Football. I remember I was at a conference in Vermont, and I had to get up to my hotel room to make sure that I watched it.
Did they have TVs in Vermont? I'm sorry. I just
alienated
a whole bunch of fans. I'm sorry.
And this was like way north in Vermont. This was like throw a snowball and it would land in Canada, wow. Which I think might be considered an invasion. I don't know. We'd have to talk to Joel about the laws of that.
Let's not get Joel excited here. He might. Yeah.
So who knows? They may not. We talked a little bit about this in Random Chatter. Are they going to do it here? It would be, you know, my view, it would be really cool if they did something at Comic-Con, but we know that they don't have a Star Wars panel there.
Yeah.
The Last Jedi panel, they're going to have a lot of the voice actors there for Rebels. I actually have to go through, I saw an earlier cut of the agenda. I have to go through it maybe this weekend to see what's been changed and updated and such, but I don't know what they're going to do. And I know last time with The Force Awakens, there were a bunch of people who were complaining about it being on Monday Night Football.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people did because there's no way to say when exactly it's going to air.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, well, when's halftime? Well, I don't know. It depends on what timing goes. Well, what, isn't it 20-minute halves or what? How do they pull it? No, it doesn't work that way. There's no real clock there. Which means a lot of people had to watch Monday Night Football that don't watch football.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, it was toward the end of the game, I think. It was later in the third or early in the fourth quarter or something like that.
Oh, I thought it was at halftime. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I thought it was halftime.
It might have been. It might have been. I don't know. But, here's the thing. You can spend a little bit of time, if you're not a football fan. I am. I know Lou is.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not a football fan, then either you just have it on in the background while you're doing something else, invite some friends over, play a game, and have it on in the background. And when it comes up, then you'll catch it. Or 4 minutes after it's on Monday Night Football, yeah. It'll be on YouTube.
Or 30 seconds after it's on.
I don't really know what there is to complain about. I mean, if they put if they put the trailer on in the middle of some show or something that I didn't watch, I really wouldn't. Knowing that it's immediately going to be posted up on social media officially by Star Wars, there's really not a complaint. So.
Yeah, that's it is what it is. It's just like when they did. Didn't they do something? Was it last year, year before? It must have been for Rogue One, where they had it during Good Morning America.
Yes.
It's like, I don't watch Good Morning America. I watch a different channel. So, I had to watch that or I had to tape it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are ways to get it. I mean, it's going to be online seconds after it's premiered elsewhere. So,
oh, yeah.
We will all see it a bazillion times before we're done watching it. So,
yep.
I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, so am I. Whenever it happens, and I'm sure that we will get some type of an announcement at least a few days before. If this is the case, if they're going to put it up on Monday Night Football, I'm sure that we will hear about it ahead of time.
Yeah. Yeah. At least a couple of days.
Otherwise, StarWars.com will just say, hey, here it is. and the world will go crazy. I mean, they might do it right now while we're actually recording this. You and I would never know.
You think they would call us first though?
I would hope they would. I mean, they have your number, right?
I think so. Wait, is my phone? No. Okay. I'll check it later. let's see here. Next up, Tamar Morrison is expressing interest in playing Captain Rex. I did read this about a week ago, and it sounded pretty cool. We had the discussion about Tamar Morrison's character and the whole fervor over, his character, his race, and everything else. But mm-hmm. I think this is a good thing. He wants to be more involved in Star Wars. He wants to get into other stuff and have his voice out there. I think this is fantastic.
Yeah. And he mentions, the exact quote was kind of couched rather generally that, hey, it could be, an older Captain Rex or something else. So mm-hmm. he seems very open to doing something in the Star Wars universe. Whether it is in film, I don't know. I don't know that it would necessarily be in animation unless they changed voice actors for it. But I think it's always great to have actors come back and do other things, whether it's reprising their role or taking on a different role. I always think that kind of stuff is exciting. I mean, these folks are part of our family.
Exactly. Know? I mean, they're part of the world already. Even if it's a different character, this is going to sound funny, but it still gives continuity to me. It feels good because you're including them in more stuff.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Which I think is always good.
I agree.
Let's see here. Oh, my God. You shared this video with me earlier today, and I just died. So where is this film? Okay, brickfanatics.co.uk has a video of basically Cheer It versus Everything. And it's, let's see, it's about 4.5 minutes long, is it?
What's the
timing here? Yeah,
they build this as the way that Rogue One should have ended. It's an absolutely hilarious parody. And Lou, I mean, you and I were talking about for as funny as it is, and it's, quote, yep. just Legos, but the amount of time and talent that it takes to do something like this.
Right. So so this is a stop action movie, basically. So you're filming every frame by mm-hmm. hand, taking individual stills and stitching them together into a movie. And I don't know if this is at, probably 30 frames a second, Think about that for how many frames you're going to have over a 4.5 minute movie. It's just amazing the amount of detail, and it gets funnier as it goes through. It's basically,
it does.
He's in the middle of a ring of stormtroopers, and I think half of them take each other out, and then he takes the rest of them out. And it's just, it gets better and better. Then, after that, it was, he takes out Scott Walker, and mm-hmm. he takes on TIE Strikers, and it just gets funnier and funnier until it gets. I won't spoil the ending because it's a good video to watch. But
yeah, the ending is absolutely worth it. This is a lot of fun, and we saw this off of Brick Fanatics. I've also seen this from like 5 other sources.
Okay.
My guess is you could probably even go to YouTube and just Google "Chur It versus Everything."
Yep.
And you'll find it. And the writing is fantastic. Mm-hmm. The stop motion animation, there's stop motion filming of it is really good. and the direction of it is really good. I mean, looking at this from a production standpoint, it's how they change views and they do the close-ups and then they pull out and then they pan over to another group. And
oh yeah, and I mean, it's just like so a real movie. I mean, they really went through and storyboarded this out and did the whole thing. And it's definitely, yeah. I mean, I don't know if this is a fan film, if you want to call it that, or if it's a real production, you know, fan company making it or a group of guys making it, but whoever did this is top notch at what they do. This is just phenomenal filmmaking. So,
yeah. So yeah, listeners, please go to Churrit Versus Everything. It's just awesome. It's awesome.
Now this last story you put in here, Tim, I'm not even going to click on this because I want you to tell this to me because I'm afraid to read this myself. So the title I get in the show notes that Tim made put up together for us was Zuvio to Return, show up in episode 9.
So question mark.
Okay. And now mind you, I was in my local Target the other day and there was still like 8 of them swinging on the pegs.
Well, I'll tell you, Lou, if you believe the speculation that comes from this article, and this article, the source here is MovieWeb, you may want to consider just picking up the rest of them because who knows? They might increase in value to $21 a piece. Essentially, the theory here, and there's no fact in this. This is total speculation. It's essentially a presumption that the characters, most likely Rey, will end up returning to Jakku. So just like we saw Luke go back to Tatooine.
Why does everyone want to go back to Jakku?
I have no idea. Jakku is a crap hole. but yeah, very similar to how we saw Anakin return to Tatooine. We saw Luke return to Tatooine, each of those in the final chapter of their trilogies. We may see Rey return to Jakku. And so there could be a possibility for us to see Constable Zuvio, in the third film of this trilogy. And that's it. I mean, that's the foundation behind this theory. Total speculation.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a shame that Hasbro made figures for somebody who never even got on screen. I mean, I would love to hear the conversation between Hasbro and their contact at Lucasfilm. And they went, okay, wait, now we spent, you know, X number of dollars on molds and making this and painting and in development.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got everything done and you cut him from the movie?
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to buy this figure now? Oh, who's going to buy this besides Lou?
Exactly. Yep. So maybe this story is actually being drummed up by Hasbro to maybe bump up sales of those rogue Zuvios that are still hanging out there.
I think it'd be hysterical if we saw Zuvio in episode 9. I think that'd be very, very funny. that would be a good bookending to a guy that got cut from the movie. So that is funny.
Yep.
Okay, so now we're up to the fun facts and trivia section, this new segment that Tim has put together for us, and I think it's been pretty good success. People seem to like it. People have written in, and sometimes they're miffed that we've presented the question and answered it before they got to write it and tell us, oh, I knew it, you know. So, but it's still fun.
Or they're telling us that as soon as we ask the question, they're screaming at their device, whatever they're listening to it, because right. They know the answer.
Right. Okay, so I don't know how difficult mine's going to be for you or not, Tim. I did some scouring and something I did not know before, so I don't know. Okay, now go back to 1977.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first movie that I still call Star Wars,
yep.
Was released, and George got fined for something in the movie. He got fined for not having opening credits in the movie. Mm-hmm. By the was it Motion Picture Association or the Screenwriters Guild?
I think it's the Screenwriters Guild.
May have been, yeah, because they had a stipulation that movies had to have opening credits, had to have the names there, and he didn't want that, so he took the hit, paid the fine, and did that. At the same time, 20th Century Fox was fined for something when this movie was released as well. Do you know what that was for? They got fined $25,000 for it.
That Fox got fined for?
Yes, the production and distribution studio got fined for something to do with the release of the movie. And like I said, this is something I hadn't heard about, but...
I don't think I've heard of this either. It can't... Well, let's see. I don't think it has anything to do with their logo or the opening fanfare, because... Everyone did that. Mm-hmm. They still do.
Nope. Wasn't that.
Did they not give credit to somebody? Did it have something to do with how they...
It has to do with how they put it in theaters. And how they were able to get theaters to accept this movie for opening weekend.
Oh, did they package it with something else, with another film?
They did.
Oh, what came out then?
So it was nothing I had ever heard of. In fact, the movie that was packaged with flopped.
Okay.
And the way this was supposed to work was that they originally moved the date up. And that was my original question was going to be, you know, how did we get to have, you know, a May release? And it was moved up because they didn't think it was going to survive in the summertime. Mm-hmm. So they moved it earlier to be pre-Memorial Day. It says, around the same time, 20th Century Fox was going to release an eagerly anticipated adaptation of a best-selling book called The Other Side of Midnight, which theaters were eager to show. Fox then stipulated that any theater showing The Other Side of Midnight must also show Star Wars.
No kidding.
Which inflated the number of screens for the movie. Needless to say, Star Wars eventually became the biggest, the highest-grossing movie ever made up to that time. The Other Side of Midnight didn't even break $25 million.
Wow.
Yeah, and as requiring the movie theaters to show one movie in exchange for another was actually illegal, 20th Century ended up being fined $25,000 for forcing theaters to show the movie with The Other Side of Midnight. So
nice.
I thought it was pretty interesting. I didn't realize that was a thing. I thought that studios did that. Yeah, you know, they package things together, say if you want this, you're going to take this with it. But evidently that was illegal. So
interesting.
I thought that was pretty...
That is a fun fact. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Especially when the movie that they were packaging it with was one that failed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That was supposed to be the big one. Everybody wanted it, and it was supposed to be an anticipated book. And, you know, obviously I was only, you know, 9, so I didn't know anything about The Other Side of Midnight. But so that was my trivia.
I still think, I mean, I'm sure you've seen the original trailer for Star Wars. And
I'm sure I've seen it since. Yeah, I don't remember seeing it back then, but I'm sure I've seen it since.
It's just so weird. Trailers back then aren't
what they are now. You know, trailers back in the 60s and 70s were nothing like what we get for, you know, movies today.
Oh yeah, it's one of the weirdest cut trailers. There's a lot of narration to it. And then they chose like really weird sounds, a very strange collection of sounds from, you know, the Star Wars palette, the Star Wars soundboard that they could put into it. But there were also like these really awkward silences, and just very, very odd. And I remember at something, and it might have even been Celebration, Mark Hamill talking about him, and I think he might have been with Carrie. They got into, it was whatever film that the Star Wars trailer happened to be showing ahead of, and they talked to the movie house. They just, you know, walked up to it. No one knew who they were, and said, "Hey, we're in a movie, and the trailer is showing for it tonight ahead of whatever film, mm-hmm. you know, Film X. We just want to go in and see the trailer," because they hadn't seen it. Hmm. I mean, trailers are not only the finished product of films are completely separated from the actors, but trailers are also completely separated. So the actors sometimes have no clue. And when they shoot movies, scenes out of order, which they very often do based on convenience and economics and that kind of stuff, sometimes the actors just have no clue what the hell they're in. And so they went into the movie house, and they saw the trailer and essentially their opinion was, this is like going to be the most abysmal thing ever, because you simply can't, like, you can't comprehend the trailer. And even like knowing Star Wars and breathing Star Wars like we do now, to watch that trailer is just, it, you're thinking, what the hell am I watching? It's just so weird. I can't imagine watching that trailer not having the context of Star Wars. I would have said, yeah, no, this movie's going to make $4. I'm not, well, I would bid a lot of money on it in the movie draft because that's how I go. And no one's going to go see it. And hey, as it turns out, you know, we're looking at one of the largest grossing films of all time.
Right.
Just so odd. So yeah, definitely. If it's something that you haven't seen in a while, go, and if you can probably find it on YouTube or wherever.
Yeah. Just, I just searched on YouTube. I'm watching it right now, actually. And I don't know if this is really, you know, you find some of this. Oh, this is the original one. It's really not, but,
it's so obscure.
It is very weird. And I do remember, I think I remember seeing this before. Kind of, you know, what's it talking about how bad trailers were and how they weren't really representative of the movie. And you're right, it does, it's very disjointed. It's very strange so as far as what is included in this and what's not. And there's no way to make heads or tails of this without knowing the story of Star Wars.
It's true. You have no idea what it is that they're trying to make.
Yeah, it's very strange. It's so odd. It's also very, you know, 70s. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's very 70s. So related to our fun facts and trivia segment here, we have we're going to do a trivia contest. So this is kind of the interactive portion with our listeners. We had an incredible donation come from one of our listeners, Joshua Sosa. Who I believe lives in or around the New York City area. We're going to be seeing him when we go to Comic-Con next week, hopefully. Josh messaged me on Twitter several weeks ago saying that he has an extra copy of the book Making of Star Wars, the definitive story behind the original film. He said it's the hardcover book. It was done in 2007. By J.W. Rinzler. So this is kind of one of the really coveted books that's out there. It really gives a lot of background of George's vision and everything that he went through, and what his inspirations were, and there's some incredible pictures in it and that kind of stuff. And it's a really, really fantastic book. I do recall flipping through this in the store. I think this is one of those books that they put it on the shelf, it comes shrink wrapped, and I did not violate the sanctity of the shrink wrap in Barnes & Noble, but there was one that was unshrink wrapped, so I do remember pulling this off the shelf more than once and flipping through it. So really, really incredible book. As I mentioned, Joshua has an extra copy of this book. And he said he wants to make this available to us through whatever mechanism we can come up with here for a contest. And so I thought about this and I figured, wow, well, as Lou mentioned, we have so much, we get a lot of interaction from this trivia segment that we've been doing here. So let's even try to step that up a little bit more. So what we're going to ask our listeners to do, and I'm going to put a couple of caveats right up front with this. First of all, because the winner of this contest will be getting this book, that was the whole purpose of me talking about the book that Joshua is contributing here. And he said he is going to handle the shipping of it. So unfortunately, we do have to limit this to our U.S. listeners. Because we don't want to stick Joshua with international shipping and such. So our international listeners, sorry, my apologies. It kind of comes down to economics and us not wanting to stick Joshua with an international shipping tab. The other caveat here is that Random Chatter Network hosts and staff are not eligible.
Oh.
So, yeah, I know. So, Lou, you can't win it. Sorry.
Okay, fine.
So what we're going to ask folks to do is to send an email. Send an email just to Lou. Okay. Do not send it to the Echo Base email account, because if you do, then all three of us, myself, Lou, and Chris, will get it. And that kind of negates the effectiveness of trivia. So just send this.
It makes it easier.
So just send this to Lou. And that is lou@randomshatter.com. Right, Lou?
Yep.
So send an email to Lou with your trivia. Obviously, it can't be something that we've already used. And Lou will, I think we'll give, what, maybe 2 weeks from the air date of this episode?
Yeah, that sounds probably good.
Okay. So we'll give folks some time. We'll give a reminder in our next episode. So 2 weeks to do this. Send Lou an email with your trivia question and the answer. Cite your sources if you can. So we know it's not something that you're just making up. and of those that Lou receives, he will pick what he thinks is the best one. Perhaps if it's a tie, then maybe Lou will read off a couple of them in the episode. And then Chris and I will, and Lou will kind of, after we go through them, maybe figure out which one we thought was the best or was our favorite, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so whoever wins this will get the hardcover copy of The Making of Star Wars, the definitive story behind the original film by J.W. Winsler, courtesy of Joshua Sosa.
Awesome. That sounds really cool. I'm glad we get to do this. And again, yeah. Joshua, thank you very much for the donation.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's not often that we get to give things away like this, and this is really cool. This is gonna be a lot of fun.
Okay, so now we can get right into our discussion, and this is especially fitting tonight since, you know, Chris is not here. We can talk about books.
We can talk about books. You know, not only can we talk about books, we can talk about Star Wars books.
Oh boy, sorry, Chris. You get a bad rap sometimes, but we're gonna play it for all it's worth. So. So we have recently read a couple of the newer canon books out, two of them being Battlefront 2 Inferno Squad,
mm-hmm.
and Phasma. Tim, what are your initial, do you want to do one first? Do you want to talk about them in general? Now, we should be upfront with this, that we're going to do some spoilers.
Yeah.
We're not going to try to spoil the entire book. We're not going to give away all the details. So if somebody catches part of this by accident and doesn't realize it was spoilery, hopefully it won't ruin the whole experience for you. We're going to talk about, you know, how we felt about the book, how it made us feel as far as Star Wars fans, if it fit in with what we think of Star Wars, maybe mm-hmm. some points about the book that were, you know, good and bad in our opinions. But yeah, definitely don't want to spoil the story aspect of it. So, Tim, do you want to talk about both books in general? Do you want to talk about one book first? Do you have a burning desire for one over the other?
We can do them in release order. So Inferno Squad came okay. first, and then Phasma.
Okay.
Now, I think the big difference between our experiences, our consumption, is I went old school, and I actually read the physical
yep.
bound
copy. You have the Dead Tree version, yep.
Yes, I've contributed to the death of trees.
And I did the Electronic Bits audio version so I could just have it streamed into my ears while I'm driving in the car.
Very good. Now, if I remember correctly, Inferno Squad was actually read by, now her name escapes me. She is the voice right. actress who voiced the character, Janina is her first name. Gosh, I can't remember her last name now.
You put me on the spot. I got to go to I'll look it up.
But she is she's a character who voices Iden Versio in the upcoming video game of Battlefront 2 Inferno Squad. So I believe she's the one who does in fact voice it.
I'm going to butcher her name too. Janina Gavankar? Is that mm-hmm. right? Yeah, okay.
Close enough.
If I get angry letters from her, I'll know.
Yeah. She's also a big fan. She listens her and Mark Hamill kind of sit around together. We have some, you know, pretty high powered listeners here. It's good.
So now this book did a couple of things. It was about Inferno Squad, which is kind of cool to get some details on that.
Mm-hmm.
It does provide a lead up for the Battlefront 2 video game.
Yep.
Which I wasn't too happy with the first Battlefront book. That really didn't do much for me.
No.
And seeing how first Battlefront didn't have any story to it, I was like, well, okay, why am I reading a book leads up to a game with no story? Now, Battlefront 2 does have a story, supposedly, which we'll find out later. But, you know, I thought this felt, and I'm going to use this term a lot during this episode, you know, either something is Star Wars-y or not Star Wars-y to me.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that makes a lot of how I, you know, feel about a book going forward. If it feels like it's set in the universe I like and feels in the universe that we love here, it feels good to me. If it feels like it's being forced into that where it's not really, you know, anything that we've ever dealt with, I don't really care for it as much. And I know this kind of goes against, and I think we may have talked about this before, because against what we've said in the past, where we want this to be about more stuff than just the little corner of the galaxy that we're all hearing about.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say I want it to be about the things, places, and people and events that we've known, as long as it's interacting and touching that a little bit, I feel warm and fuzzy.
Sure.
You know, so, you know, with this novel, you know, touching on the events that we've just recently had in movies and in the other, you know, in the original trilogy, I feel really good about this book.
Yeah. I think it's interesting listening to or looking at things, especially on social media, so you kind of get an interesting perspective of people's opinions. There were a lot of folks who ultimately did not like this book because its link to the video game. They were expecting a video game book. They were expecting this action-y, shoot-em-up kind of book that, you know, puts you into the heads of the main characters as they're going through similar situations as you would in a video game. And while I understand that, I am glad that that is not what they did in this book. And they actually being Christy Golden. So credit to Christy Golden, who's the author of this, and she's done a lot of other Star Wars stuff. I really liked all the context that was in this book. And I'm appreciating the fact, and this kind of goes a little bit to some discussion that we had of probably a few months ago, talking about films in Star Wars and some of these standalone films and the possibility of, or at least not possibility, our own personal speculation and our own thoughts on doing films in different genres. But still them being Star Wars films. And this book is really kind of like that. This book was filled with a lot more intrigue than we're used to in a Star Wars book. It was less action-y than most Star Wars books, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it had also some very intense things, some very intense situations that may not have been action-y. But you're thinking, wow, how are the characters going to get through this? How are they going to get out of this? You start wondering how they're going to be influenced, because there was a lot of intrigue. They were acting as spies. They were infiltrating rebel cells. And you're thinking, oh, this is really dangerous. And bad things are – there's so much potential for bad things to happen. I love that. And it was such – to me, it was such a compelling read. And so similar to a lot of the non-Star Wars books that I read in that particular respect, because of that intrigue and that spy element. I really like the story that she put together. I thought there's great character development in it. It did bring us to a few different worlds. It had the tie-in big picture. I mean, I'll mention it because it's essentially mentioned right up front in the book. The main character, Iden Versio, is a survivor of the first Death Star.
Mm-hmm.
She's one of the few TIE pilots, along with Vader, who was off the Death Star trying to repel the rebel attack. The Death Star blows up. Her ship is insanely damaged. And she actually finds herself on Yavin 4. And they don't tell a lot about this story. She just kind of, she tells it as a sidebar, but she survives, she steals the ship, and she makes her way back to the Empire. And it's just incredibly well done. And the characters are not cookie cutter characters, very different characters that are put together in it. Lou, did you ever read the Wraith Squadron books?
No, I did not.
Okay. So Wraith Squadron was a handful of books that were done after the Rogue Squadron books. So they're, you know, part of that, the X-Wing series of books that was done. And I love those books. The Wraith Squadron ones were a little more of this element. They were less fighter pilot and more infiltrating squad, special forces kind of stuff. Although I think they really fell short of how they did it.
Okay.
This book did it really well, exceptionally well.
Well, you know, the one thing that kind of made me a little bit, maybe it was my own thoughts on it. When I think of, you know, squad, I always think of squadron first, not squad of troopers. I think of a squadron of, you know, fighters. Mm-hmm. And this really wasn't about a squadron. It was a squad of troopers. So, that was kind of a letdown for me, but that was probably the only letdown in this whole book, I think, personally.
Sure.
The characters are well-developed. I thought it was great how they played her as, especially in the beginning, she had to prove to everybody that, you know, she survived the Death Star, not because she ran away or because she was, you know, there was a lot of speculation on her as a character in the novel. About what her motivation was, why she survived the Death Star, was it her fault? Was, you know, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I never thought of it that way. You know, that would be a question. You know, but yeah, if you were a naval officer and your ship went down and you happened to be off the ship when it went down and you survived, maybe you made some questions about. Well, okay, did you know about that? Were you So that was kind of cool. I like the fact that Versio was the daughter of a high-ranking official, and she kind of had to prove herself above and beyond what a normal person would, just because of who her father was. So that was kind of cool. I like that.
Well, and interestingly enough, not only to others, but also to her father.
Yeah, that's right.
Her father was a real hard ass, and he expected more from her than he did anyone else.
Yep.
So she was certainly not handed anything.
Exactly. Yeah. No. Definitely right. So now the gist of this. Now I'm trying to just kind of paraphrase it without getting too far into detail. They want to put together this squad, you know, kind of an elite squad to go take out the rest of Saw's partisans, right? And,
yes.
And she put together her squad herself. And it's interesting to watch them gel as a unit, you know, throughout this book. And you had different, I had different thoughts as I went through this as to who would live, who would die, if these people were really on board with her, if it was, you know, how things are going to play out. And it was good because I don't think I ever had it pinpointed until the very end as to what was going to go on. I don't mind always. I don't mind finding, you know, I can foretell what's going to happen at the end of a book, but I love it when I'm surprised.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And there definitely were some good surprises that came around in this. The character development in it was just really interesting. And there were certain characters that you thought would, you know, when they're in their situation where they have infiltrated this particular group, they start to sympathize with the group. And obviously this book is written from the Imperial perspective. And you see this really interesting dynamic and conflict between the rhetoric of the Empire and their perception of the rebellion. And you can see the valid points that both of them have, which, you know, to me is really neat. And particularly when they're infiltrating these different groups, they have to speak as if they were rebels. So right. They're, you know, saying down with the Empire, down with the Empire, and can't believe what they did here. And they killed all these innocent people on Alderaan. Well, in the back of their head, and sometimes Christy Golden will go into the thoughts of these people as they're thinking, yeah, you know what? Because even the children that were on Alderaan were going to grow up to be murderous rebels.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, wow, this is just like really,
right?
Like emotionally and mentally, this is some pretty hardcore stuff.
It's always interesting for me to get that perspective of the Imperial side.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you got to think, I mean, even if you think the Empire is evil, and yeah, they probably are. You know,
they're there for the safety and security of the citizens.
They are, exactly. But, you know, when you think about this, most people that are in the Empire, in serving on the line or serving their role in the organization, don't think they're evil. You know,
no.
They're doing the right thing. They're doing what they were told to do. They're doing what is the, you know, the right lawful thing to do. They're obeying the government. They're carrying out the orders of their superiors.
Yep. They're not there for the politics. That's
right.
It's they're doing their duty. It's a job. Yeah. So it does make for some really interesting perspective. You see the thoughts of people who are initially, you know, parts of this squad who are presented to you as career people. They're hardcore in what they do. They're experienced professionals. Yet they're put into situations that they never have been before. And they end up reacting differently than what, not only what you as a reader expect them to do, but they react differently from what they themselves expect that they would, as well as the rest of their squad mates.
Right. And I think it's interesting to see how some of their attitudes change a little bit as the story goes on.
Oh yeah.
You know, you get to the end of it. Now it's like they're thinking, oh, you know, am I really on the right side, or is this really what should be done? You know, so it does show you that they're humans and show you that they're, you know, they do have a moral sense to them, and now they're questioning some of that. And I think that you might have the same kind of thing from the other side of the coin too. If you had, you know, rebels in the Imperial, maybe not quite as much because they know they're fighting against something bad, whereas these guys don't know they're part of something bad. But
right. Yep.
You know, we saw some of the same themes in Phasma as well.
Yes.
And those are probably parts of the book that I like the most in Phasma. Now, let's switch gears to Faye. There's Tim showing his Phasma book to me again. And I don't have a copy. I can show you on my iPhone, the you know, the cover when I play the book. But
Phasma. You also don't get the cool posters that that get included in these books, too.
No, I don't. I don't.
Barnes & Noble, in particular, does, you know, there's...
Oh, sweet.
That one there on that side, and then there's that.
Cool, yeah.
So, yeah, so, you know, these little mini posters, which, I mean, if you're inclined to take them out, I guess they're, you know, they're pretty good artwork.
Mm-hmm.
The Phasma one on one side has Phasma, and on the other side has one of the leading characters in this named Cardinal. And there's also one in the Battlefront book, which is actually kind of, well, it's the cover art, really. It's kind of the iconic picture of who we presume to be Eden Versio, standing next to an Imperial flag and watching things burn.
Yeah.
So... But and kind of just to wrap up Inferno Squad, though, so presumably we see that we know that Eden Versio is in the video game. That's essentially been confirmed for us. I don't know if any of the other squad members are going to be in the video game. We don't know exactly how they're going to script it. I'm hopeful that there is more than just kind of consequential, hey, the book has these characters and the game has these same characters and that's it. I do hope that there is some kind of flow from the book into the video game.
Yeah, seeing how there's a storyline in Battlefront 2, I hope you get to play as a member of the squad.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a lot of fun. Maybe even switching off between members of the squad.
Yeah, yep.
But we'll see. I'm looking forward to that game, even though I didn't play Battlefront very much at all because it just didn't interest me. But
yeah. And I'd like to see more books on this group and in this style of writing. Mm-hmm. I really like a lot what Christy Golden did with this. I think she did an incredible job writing this. I love the characters. I love that intrigue, that military spy intrigue kind of subgenre, I guess. And yeah. I'd love to see more of it. So bring us more.
Yep. And you know, in my final thoughts on this, as we move on to Phasma, this to me was very much a Star Wars book.
Yeah.
It set the tone from the beginning as far as where we were, what part of the universe we were in, and what effects we were going to see, or what stuff that we know affected the story going forward. And it did put me in a place where at the end of the book, I kind of knew where this sat in canon as far as, yeah, you know, what I know was out there. And I think that's in direct contrast to what I ended up with Phasma when I got done with that one. I enjoyed Phasma quite a bit. There was some great stuff in the book, but the great stuff for me was the last third or quarter of the book.
Yeah, I can understand why.
Mm-hmm. So Phasma was a little bit different take. It was obviously a origin story for a character that we did not get much screen time from in TFA.
Disappointingly so.
Yeah. You know, they played up this character that, oh my God, you know, we have this chrome stormtrooper now. This looks just amazing. You know, who is this person? You know, what is this character going to do? Where'd they come from? How'd they get that chrome armor? Excuse me. And, you know, and then we found out it was being, you know, played by a woman. We're like, oh my God, it's even more cool now. You know, what's her story? How'd she get to become this, you know, elite stormtrooper? And what was the deal there? And we didn't really see her in the movie at all. I mean,
no.
She could have been Constable Zuvio for all I know. Maybe it was Zuvio inside that chrome armor.
Yep. Fleeting moments. I mean, it's we saw her in the opening scene, and after the opening scene, she had a little bit of dialogue, and then we saw when Finn and Han and Chewie captured her and forced her to basically do their will, and then they stuck her in a trash compactor. So.
Right. You know, and that's the thing, you know, for the opening scene in the opening section where she, you know, interacts with Finn, and you're like, oh my God, she's going to be awesome. And she didn't do anything. You know, it was like, okay. So when I heard this book is coming out, we're going to get an origin story for her, I was like, okay, cool. So now, Tim, let me ask you one thing. And I know you've read the book now, but, you know, going into the book, was there one question that you really wanted to get answered from Phasma?
Gosh.
Because I can tell you, from my side of things, there was one question I had in my mind going into this book.
I don't know that I necessarily had. I mean, I was just generally interested in what her origin story was. But what was your question?
Well, my one question was, where'd the armor come from? Why is she wearing chrome armor?
Oh, yeah.
And what was the resolution to that? Mm-hmm. And we didn't get that until, like, what, the last...
It's the last chapter.
Yeah,
it's
practically, I was going to say, it was like the last 30 minutes of the audiobook. I'm like, and by now I'm getting up to the end of the book, I'm going, really?
Like, yeah.
You know, I've gone, let's see, how long was the book? It was 10 hours and 22 minutes. I'm like, I've gone like, you know, 9 hours and 45 minutes, and I haven't heard a bit about this. Like, what the, come on. You got to give me something. You got to give me that. Mm-hmm. So at least the book does fulfill that in the end. And actually, that was a pretty good explanation for it, personally.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting. To me, I think I may have liked this book more than you did.
Okay.
The story itself was good. Actually, what I appreciated, I think, the most out of this was the method of the storytelling. The whole premise of the storytelling with this, and it's not really spoiling anything because this gets set up in the first two chapters, is that there is a resistance intel agent that gets captured by a First Order battle cruiser, which is under the command of, as we mentioned, the Cardinal. And so we're familiar with Phasma. Phasma has the chrome armor. Well, Cardinal has this bright red armor.
Mm-hmm.
Mildly ridiculous.
A little bit, yeah. Concepts. But you think about that, though. I mean, if that was in visuals for you, and you saw a bunch of white stormtroopers and one guy in red with a cape, you'd be like, huh, he must be something special. You know, say there's a story there, and you know, this guy is clearly in charge.
That's the one you shoot first.
Well, that's true too. Yeah.
And so essentially the premise of this is what was her name? What was the name of the resistance agent here?
She was never called my name very much, so I don't remember off the top of my head.
Vi Marotti.
There you go. That sounds right.
So she gets captured, and essentially the Cardinal is interrogating her. And he's a reluctant torturer. He definitely does not... It's not in his personality to be using the torture aspects of interrogation.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, he wants as much information as he can possibly get on Phasma to result in her downfall. He is professionally threatened by Phasma and her whole existence. Mm-hmm. The Cardinal existed long before Phasma did in the First Order, and he's essentially had a lot of his power stripped from him and handed to her. And so he wants to be able to prove to the powers that be, particularly Hux, that she is either unreliable or traitorous or something. He doesn't know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
All he knows is that Vi has been doing some type of research on Phasma. And so as he's questioning Vi, she's telling... Basically, her methodology here is giving little vignettes of how Phasma came to be Phasma.
Right.
The Phasma that we know. And she builds a story, basically, from her being a teenager all the way up. And I think the stories are really interesting. They're in a planet that's been essentially devastated by industry or an industrial accident. And it's fallen to tribes, and they're trying to survive. And it's a really, to me, it was a very compelling story. One, it was kind of like reading short stories because it was done in these little vignettes, which were then occasionally interrupted by coming back to at least what was defined in the book as present day, which was Vi and Cardinal.
Yeah, because they'll keep going back and forth, and I'm not sure how the book did this as far as chapters go, but you know, there'd be a little interlude, and then you'd hear some silence, and you'd hear the sound effect of starting a new part of the book, and you'd hear the narrator say, you know, on Parnassos 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and we'd get that part of the story. And you'd say, on the Absolution now, or whatever.
Right.
You know, so it kind of took you out of it a little bit, in, at least listening to the audiobook version of it. Maybe it wasn't as intrusive in the book because you just see it on the page, probably.
Yes, yeah.
But you're right. The story of her on Parnassos in the beginning of her, you know, growing up as a young girl and in very primitive situations where, you know, there was no electricity, there was no, you know, data pads, you know, certainly wasn't any blaster rifles or lightsabers.
Mm-hmm.
It was just basically tribes growing up in the bush, basically, or in this case, in rocky areas that didn't have that were above the water, because I guess part of the planet was ravaged by water, part of the planet was just not desert, but just rocky, barren ground. In the struggle for life between different tribes.
I mean, and it gave you a picture of something very post-apocalyptic, like a like a Mad Max kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
You know, where it was just people, you could barely survive off the land because the land didn't provide anything for you.
Yeah.
And so it was these tribes with remnants of technology that they weren't even able to use as intended because the technology no longer worked.
So the back and forth thing took me out of it a little bit, and I liked her way of doing this. You know, Cardinal takes her because he knows that her ship has been to Parnassos recently, so he knows that's where Fez is from, and they literally say that nobody in the First Order knows anything about Phasma.
True.
Where she came from, what she did, how she got there, why she, you know, they know nothing. So he's prompting her for information to get as much out of her as he can. And she seems to be an old hat at knowing how to survive interrogations and knowing how to manipulate her captor into doing what she wants, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's been a lot of good play between her and Cardinal. And I'm thinking at some point, Cardinal's just going to go, you know what, I'm done with this BS, and just blast her. Because you know, she's not giving me anything. And that's how I felt through the whole book. I'm like, I don't care about this. This isn't helping me understand the book. And it wasn't helping Cardinal understand what he can use against Phasma. You know, it was a really long way to get to where they got to, where she actually gave him a little bit of intel that he could use against Phasma. And I felt his frustration all through the book.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, she was stringing him. She was telling him the stories, but she was still stringing him along because that's their method of survival. Try to stay alive as long as possible, and you just give little breadcrumbs.
So
he got very frustrated with it. And it was very interesting because his story, while it was kind of the initiating part of this book, was really such a side story. And Delilah Dawson, by the way, was the author of this. And she did, it was very interesting methodology of character development of Cardinal. Because you really only got these very little snippets of Cardinal, but very early on, you got to understand what his motivations were. You got to understand the kind of soldier that he was. He was a good soldier. He was an obedient soldier. But he basically ran an academy with kids. He did not kill people. He had never interrogated anyone before. So he's doing things that were not in his nature to do. And he's trying to put this tough facade to Vi. And Vi very early on came to understand this guy is not the tough, intimidating armor that he wears. There is something much softer and deeper underneath that armor, and she picked away at that. Now, yes, the result of this was some dragged out stories about Phasma, but in the end, you kind of see where it all comes together in this origin story of Phasma.
It came together very nicely in the end. You're right; it came together very, very nicely in the end. But you know, the problem I ran into with this is not. You know, it wasn't that I felt Cardinal's pain and Cardinal's, you know, frustration with her. I was frustrated with the story because of, you know, I felt like I was feeling the same thing Cardinal was. I wasn't just frustrated for him. I was feeling the same thing. I'm like, I don't care about, you know, her as a little girl on in the Skyer and what she did. And I'm like, oh, this doesn't give me anything. I don't care about her that way. But the parts of the story on the Absolution, which was the, you know, Star Destroyer that he was on, and the stuff about the interplay politics between Hux and his father, and
oh yeah,
and where that played out, and the whole, you can kind of see how this plays out with stuff in The Force Awakens and who these people were. And that's where, to me, it becomes Star Wars, because now we're talking about stuff I know that we've seen on screen that we can put this in place. When it's just mm-hmm. people on some planet that is just, you know, never heard before, you know, like you said, it's Mad Max-ish kind of stuff. It's not Star Wars to me. It didn't pull me in. It didn't keep me engaged. The stuff about Cardinal and her on the Absolution and the stuff he was doing and trying to figure out how he could use it against Phasma, and then some of the twists and turns at the end of this story were just like, oh, okay. You know, that wasn't where I expected this to go. Those kind of things are all what kept me interested in this book. And at the end, right. I really did enjoy it, but there were a lot of sections of the book that I'm like going, okay, I'll suffer through this part just to get to the good stuff back on the Absolution again. But
I also like the bigger arcs of things. So the stuff between the junior and senior Hux, you know, in the Aftermath books, in Chuck Wendig's Aftermath books. So, you know, we saw the introduction of Brendel Senior, Hux Senior. Mm-hmm. And then in the film, in The Force Awakens, we see Hux Junior. And there was no explanation of, well, anything in that time that transpired. And this book builds that bridge. Mm-hmm. We also, and I would have to go back to the last Aftermath book to see, but the character of Cardinal, it rang enough of a bell to me that this person was in the end of the last Aftermath book. He was an adolescent in the end of that book, because I remember toward the end of that book, they were talking about, you know, they had gathered up these kids and they were starting to do their training. And this was, he was one of those who kind of became a natural leader and got involved in their training. And I have to go back to that Aftermath book to see who it was by name, but presumably that is the character that became Cardinal.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
So, you know, I also like those ties. I mean, for as much as I want a book to stand on its own, what helps it feel like Star Wars to me, kind of going to your point, is these connections outside the book and beyond the book with mm-hmm. the greater Star Wars universe.
Yeah, the connections are what really make it for me. If you can tie this into something we know about, it's just like, what was it, Lost Stars, I think, yes, it was. Mm-hmm. Where they had the tie-in to the whole Death Star thing and the final days of that, and yep. where Vader's Star Destroyer was going and coming. And that, to me, was cool, because we got a new story that didn't involve really the characters that we've known and loved from the trilogy, but it interplayed with them. You know, we knew where we were. It was mm-hmm. This is happening right now. And at this time, that's when, you know, Luke and them were doing, you know, that, oh, I love this, you know. It was like, I get really excited about that. But it's a story that's different. It's something new. It's something outside of what we're, you know, it's not about Luke, Han, and Leia.
Yeah.
And that to me makes this really, really good. And same thing with this one. We were getting this interplayed amongst the events we know that are happening, or at least maybe this is before them, but at least we know where this sits in relation to that. Mm-hmm. And how the events of this are playing into things that we're going to get to see later on in TFA and beyond.
Yeah. Yeah, this book was definitely much more subtle in terms of those broader connections. I mean, obviously, by the title of the book, the big focus was Phasma.
Yeah, yeah.
And we really, to me, for an origin story, it worked. I had no problems with it as an origin story and for that background that they gave of Phasma. I liked it.
Yep. Like I said, I enjoyed it too. I think at the end of the day, I would recommend the book. I would recommend reading this. It does give you some good stuff. And it answered, like I said, it answered that one question I really wanted to get answered. You know, why does she have chrome armor?
And you have to fast forward all the way to the end to get that answer.
Yeah. When I said 10 hours and 22 minutes, that was actually Battlefront 2. This was 12 hours and 14 minutes. So I think 11 hours and 45 minutes worth of listening just to get to the point where they tell you where she got her armor from. And, yeah. And you know, overall, I'm happy I got the answer, but it wasn't as satisfying as I thought it was going to be.
I mean, it was unique.
Yeah, I liked where she got it. The problem I have with it, and I don't want to say this without giving it away, I like where it came from.
Yes.
I don't like how she got it, if that makes sense to you.
Yes, that absolutely makes sense to me. I do. I also appreciate where it came from. I think that's another.
That was a very unique way to put that. I was very happy with that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's. I mean, the book definitely paints her as the badass that we think she is, from the little snippets of her that we got in The Force Awakens. And
I hope she shows up in The Last Jedi, because, man.
Oh, I hope so, too.
When I say, I know she's in the movie. I hope she shows up as in, I want her to be a badass in the movie.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah. And now I guess there's a comic mini series of how she gets out of the trash compactor and escapes the Death Star 3 and goes on to live a probably short but maybe happy and productive life of killing people. Whatever it is that she does, it gives us the reason and the means of her being in the next film. Okay. So that's kind of an important bridge for her there as well. But yeah, that's Phasma, but by Delilah Dawson. That's the Phasma origin story.
Yeah, I was happy with it. And I think any other Star Wars fan would be happy with these books too. I think I liked Battlefront 2 better than Phasma.
Yeah, I did too.
But
I did too. I'll agree with that.
The next time we can get a show without Chris, we'll have to talk about Leia.
Yes, I'm halfway through Leia right now. And I am loving it. That's another very, very compelling read.
And again, it is. This one, for me, because it is set in settings that we're familiar with in Star Wars, mm-hmm. it feels very Star Wars-y to me. And I really enjoy this.
And you can make a lot of those connections, and you're like, oh, that's why they did that, or that's where this idea came from. And I really appreciate the connecting those dots that the authors are doing. And Claudia Gray, like I said, I'm about halfway through it, seemed to do so far a really incredible job of it. I got through half of it on a flight that I had this past weekend. It's actually a fairly sizable book, but because it is young adult, there's a little bit more white space, so you just fly through the pages really fast in it. But it's a very compelling read. It's been good, so I'm looking forward to jumping back into it. I may even finish it this weekend.
Cool. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned, you know, it's a young adult novel, and it is, but it doesn't
feel like it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it does not feel like it at all.
No,
the themes,
the words, it's all. I quite honestly couldn't tell you the difference between this and a regular novel.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of the young adult novels have been that way. I mean, Lost Stars is a young adult novel. Mm-hmm. That didn't seem very, you know, young adult to me. It seemed like a regular novel, and this one does too. And it fills in a lot of details, a lot of gaps. So I think this is a great introduction for how Leia became involved with the Resistance or with the Rebellion.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. I mean, again, you see, it's another story that has some intrigue in it, with Bail and Brea Organa, mm-hmm. and what they're involved in. And yeah, it's great. I'm looking forward to talking about that book with you.
Cool.
Oh, by the way, Chris, what were your thoughts on these books? Okay, good.
And dead silence. Yeah, okay. Just like we had envisioned. Yeah.
Sorry, buddy.
We love you, Chris. We love you. You know, in terms of how we're doing this, we're keeping this on a little shorter basis too, because we're trying to get back to that 45 minutes to an hour, and we've been miserably failing at this with random chatter recently. So it's nice that we're back to close. We're about an hour and 20 minutes in here, so at around 15. So I'm happy with that. We do want to plug one thing on the network outside of Echo Base, and that is going to be our upcoming movie draft on Random Chatter. I think we're going to record this within the next week to get our fall movies in. This will be October through December. And hopefully we're going to have a good selection of maybe four or five hosts. I'm hoping five to six on the show to debate movies and see who wants to win what and see how much movie money Tim's going to pay for the whatever the new version of Nutjob 2 is for the fall.
Folks, it's a lot of fun. If you have not listened to one of our movie drafts, and I know that we have a lot of listeners who just listen to Echo Base, you love the Star Wars stuff, and we appreciate that, and that's awesome. Please take a chance and explore some of the other stuff that we do. Check out the Random Chatter Show, and the movie drafts are just, they're a lot of fun. You really get to listen to a group of people basically just banter about these movies, and it's kind of like an auction that we have for them. Like so,
yeah. And I lost control of the last one miserably. hence, Tim voted or bid $26, I think, or 26 credits for Nutjob 2, Nutty by Nature. And Tim, I'm looking through this year, this next section's list. I think you should look at My Little Ponies coming up. Let's see here. That may be yours, I think. Yeah, you're gonna get.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's what I gotta go for.
Ferdinand is on there. Vote for that one. you know, ones to stay away from, Chris. I'm sorry, Tim. Stay away from The Last Jedi. Stay away from Blade Runner. You know, movies that aren't going to do very well. You don't want to get bidding on those because that'll just suck up all your money. You won't have anything left to bid on. Yeah. On great Thor, movies like, Thor, like Tyler Perry's Boo 2 and Madea Halloween.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, this. Sure.
Tune into that because it is fun. And we do let the audience play as well, too. So once we're done bidding on the movies, you guys can then put together your fantasy team, I guess, if you will, based on 100 credits and pick whatever we, you know, whatever was bid on by the hosts at that buy-in rate and put your best movies together for it. So,
yeah.
And let's see, I think that's about it for that. We're going to post up. So if you have any questions for us or anything you want to feedback on the books that we just discussed here and how you like them, you know, let us know. You can send us an email. You can do it by sending it to echobase@randomchatter.com. You can also find us online. We're at facebook.com/randomchatternetwork. You can find us on Twitter. The podcast has a feed at Echobase Podcast. You can also find it at Random Chatter. You can find me and Random Chatter at Lusecki. That's Lusecki. You can find Chris, who's not with us, at The Curse of Chris. And Tim, where can they find you?
At Qui-Gon Tim. That's Tim with two M's. Also, we definitely appreciate, your part, hit us up at randomchatter.com. Sorry, Lou, I was a little...
Sorry,
little...
I didn't...
That was on me. I took it over too quickly. Head over to randomchatter.com, check out all of our shows there. We have a blog, we have a regular poll that we put up there. Sometimes it's just general interest stuff. I think right now the current poll is what TV shows, what returning shows are you most interested in seeing?
Yep.
Sometimes we'll have a poll up there of that might influence some of the stuff we do here on the network. So jump on in and answer some of those questions. When you see them, we have some blog posts up there. You can get all of our previous episodes also up there and some other stuff that we post. Please be sure to spread the word and support us. Leave us some great reviews on iTunes and Stitcher. You know, click all the stars and write some good stuff that will compel people to come listen to us. Be sure to tell your friends about us, total strangers, family, coworkers, all that good stuff. Anyone who you see who has an interest in Star Wars, you might say, oh, well, you know, this person isn't a real big fan. Bring them on in. Maybe we can help build their fandom and expand their interest a little bit. I mean, there's a lot of folks out there who are Star Wars fans. They're great, solid Star Wars fans. The only thing that they're familiar with is the films, and that's okay. But we certainly like to have an opportunity to expand their interests. And of course, here on Echo Base, we talk about a whole bunch of different things across Star Wars. Obviously, we talk about the books. We've mentioned some of the games, board games, video games, animated series, all that kind of stuff. So lots of fun. We also appreciate getting a little bit of financial support. If it is financially possible for you to do so, head over to patreon.com/randomchatter. The minimum contribution that you can make is $1 a month. It's very easy to do through there, patreon.com/randomchatter. You create an account like you do for every other thing that you do on the internet, so this is nothing hugely different. You can do secure transaction on there. You give them a credit card number, and they will withdraw on a monthly basis however much it is that you want to contribute. So the minimum is $1, and even just that dollar gets you something from us because we like to give you stuff. We did just announce our little... All right, Lou is distracting me by showing me Thrawn.
I would never distract you, Tim.
But Lou is not going to give away his Thrawn. Since I was talking about giveaways. Oh, and a Death Trooper. I like the Death Trooper.
Did I totally Patreon. Distract you? Oh, yeah, Patreon. Yeah, yeah. We're asking for money. That's right. I forgot. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. patreon.com/randomchatter, $1 a month. Yes, gets you in the Slack. That's what I was going to mention, the Slack. And they can, on Slack, damn it, Lou.
It's not often I can get Tim confused and flustered, but that's good. That's awesome.
It's true. Yeah, yeah. Okay, patreon.com/randomchatter. You've heard my pitch before. Go do it. The music you hear on this podcast is The Force Theme by Scandroid and The Imperial March by Cell Dweller, which are really the same people, but they just brand differently once in a while. So with that, Luke.
With that, I think we're done. So thanks for listening, and we'll come back at you in about another week.